It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we've got a special bonus episode for you today with two very special guests here to talk about their upcoming Dark Horse book, Only the Savage Are Left, which is going to be hitting stores on June 3rd. Zach Kaplan and Stefano Raffaele.
Yes.
Welcome.
Hey, guys.
Oh, that whole intro. I still ruined it a little bit. I know, but we can kind of move on from there. So just to mention a little bit more about this book, like I said, it's coming out June 3rd. But Zach, I do want to start with, this is part of a big deal that you made with Dark Horse. You announced, I believe, three titles initially, including Kill All Immortals 3. We've talked to you about Kill All Immortals before.
Yes.
Get another title as well. And this was announced in advance, but the big, like, coming out party for it was a Comics Pro this past weekend. And just to lay out the information there for anybody in the podcast, that is a annual conference where retailers meet with publishers and there's announcements and they talk about issues with the industry. You got on stage, you presented, you had a table. It was a whole weekend for you. What was that experience like?
I'm exhausted from it, but it was extremely affirming and exciting. I mean, these are talk about pressure. These are the top 200 to 300 stores in the United States. These are extremely discerning store owners who have seen absolutely everything. I mean, some of these guys have and girls have been in business for 30, 40, 50 years. You know, it was really a wealth of comic experience. So the pressure was on for sure, but it felt great to share the news and to tell each of them. I got to sit down with each of these stores and tell them about these books, and just very excited. Excited about this slate, excited to be collaborating with Dark Horse. And you know, I've had a really exciting partnership with Dark Horse for several years. Breakout, Midnight Shadows, Kill All Immortals, and Masterminds. And so it just made a lot of sense to say, hey, rather than, you know, continue to spread books all around at different publishers, we're really working well together. Let's and we're seeing success. So let's just continue this partnership. And so very excited about it and excited to bring these books all together this year.
And not to keep on this, but Comics Pro isn't like a typical comic book convention. Like you mentioned, there's these retailer roundtables, but I will say, they do have a room that's like the closest you're going to get to comic convention, where they have these tables, but it's all comic book retailers coming through. I was kind of like catty corner most of the time in that room watching you, and you were mobbed. Like that's got to feel pretty good too.
It was busy. You know, it was very fulfilling for me. I also think Comics Pro, I mean, I'll give them a shout out. I think they've been around a long time. And they're having a bit of a moment. So if you're a creator or Comics Press or anyone and you're listening to this, you should go next year to Comics Pro. It's an absolutely amazing experience. There were a lot of fantastic creators. I think we saw more creators coming through than ever before. But yeah, there was a genuine interest. I mean, I'm trying to write mainstream books that can have mass appeal, and then I like to sneak in thought-provoking themes and interesting character stories. And so, you know, that's something that there's a real appetite for, I think, in the industry, and it was exciting to see that response.
And Stefano, what was it like for you when Zach told you you can't go to Comics Pro? You're not allowed there.
I would have loved. Hold on, I did not tell him that. I would have loved for him to go.
He didn't.
Yeah, let's talk about this project in particular. We got a sneak peek at a couple of pages of the book, and we're a little early because, like I said, it's coming out in June. We're talking now towards the end of February. So normally I'd lay out the concept here, but Zach, I'd love to know what you want to pitch about it right now?
Yeah. I mean, I think the solicitation is out. And so there is a synopsis already on the book. And we're kind of excited to get a little head start. So we have even more time to let readers and people get acquainted with it. But yeah, it's a monster apocalypse book. It's a book where a virus has taken over and is turning everyone into monsters. So it's very similar to kind of your classic zombie apocalypse stories like Walking Dead or Last of Us, but there's a twist in this world. We've discovered a cure, and you would think that's a good thing, but it's not. The cure is that if you kill someone that's infected and you burn their remains and inhale the smoke, you can survive. But people would not turn on each other just for self-interest, would they? And the answer is, of course, they would. And so the world has descended into your classic post-apocalyptic kind of landscape where this virus has turned people into monsters. And it follows a young man. His name is Ryder. And he's kind of been an isolationist. He's tried to hide away from this situation. But the circumstances of the first issue throw him into this world. And he has to kind of explore, you know, how to survive. It's just a great mix of, if you love post-apocalyptic stories and you love monster stories and you love coming-of-age stories, you will love this book.
Stefano, I'm curious what drew you to the project. I think, you know, you've done your own independent work, but you're definitely very well known for your work for Marvel, for DC. You've got a lot of franchise stuff going on, like you're doing Aliens versus Captain America right now. So why pivot to this? What drew you to this in particular?
Well, I must say that I do love post-apocalyptic stories. I like the environment. And what I like most in this project, because me and Zach, we are searching for the right project since a while. And what I like most in this project is that it is a post-apocalyptic love story, and it is brutal. It has violence in it, but we follow the journey of the two main characters. They are very different, and we see how they change through the story. For example, the main male character is a pacifist. Mm-hmm. And so he really believes that violence is wrong, but he's forced to go out in this world, and to decide what to do in order to save the one he loves, and we see how his choices, his hard choices, changes him. And I can't say more. I would like to say more.
Well, I'd love to ask you about the visual approach, though.
It's difficult to...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like we've been talking about a little bit, there's a lot of post-apocalyptic stories. You got your Walking Dead, your Crossed, etc. You even got some like monster apocalypse stuff. But I assume you want to do something different. And from the preview pages, it certainly looks different. So how do you approach something like that? I mean, I'm sure part of it comes from Zach's script, but... it's really up to you in terms of crafting the look of the world and the look of the creatures and what people become. So how did you start to break that down?
Well, the great thing, the great surprise, but it was not a surprise because I thought about this the same moment that we started to change emails between me and Zach. We have the same wavelength on the cinematic approach, on story tastes, and so it was very, it was, how can I say it in English? I must say sorry for my English.
Oh, no, no, right. Yeah.
I will try to survive this podcast better than my
I'm doing sorry great. For hours.
No, you're doing great.
So, I mean, we are on the same wavelength. So everything is very easy. It's very smooth because we have the same cinematic tastes, same. I read his script. Mm-hmm. I love tight scripts, by the way, and I just imagine the scenes that it's very easy to click. I don't know how to speak in English. And what I love about the monsters is that they are not from hell. They are not demonic monsters. Right. They are human. You see it because they have they don't have demon eyes. For example, they have animal eyes. You see. We talked about a lot of things. For example, the idea of the shield as a school cross sign, or the idea of the T-shirt. We were searching for something that you could say, okay, this is the character.
That really comes through. The art is amazing. And, you know, the stuff that we've seen, the kind of crossing shield was such a powerful, iconic thing that you're like, oh, wow, like that. It's come to this, you know, like it's
Pete,
such
when
a.
When I saw that come through, I was just like, because that was all Stefano. And it was just like, oh, that is absolutely genius. Like the contrast of using something that's a symbol for bringing people to safety and connecting people and something that we think of as a family suburban symbol and a symbol of joy, and it's being used to fight monsters. It was such a great touch.
Was there also a party that was like, oh, I should have thought of that. That's so brilliant. That's so great.
Yes, maybe. But like that's the great thing about bringing on a collaborator like Stefano is because, you know, he's bringing his own vision, and it's such a joy. I don't want to have to do all the work. So it's such a joy to say, Stefano, what's going on here? And what does this look like? And to let him, you know, I can say, I think that these monsters are animalistic and they're organic, but he is the one that comes up with the, how to translate that in a visual way. And so, it's a pleasure to see an artist bring their own vision to it and create it and co-create, you know?
Yeah, the art has such an epic feel to it. So when you're going into a post-apocalyptic story, you really got to kind of get sucked into this world. And the art does such a great job of just immediately getting you there. And you're like, oh, wow, just the imagery kind of really gives you so much information, whether you're processing it right away or as the book goes on. But it's amazing. One of the things that kind of occurred to me that we're kind of talking about is, you know, the twists, the turns. It is this thing that we've seen before of zombies, post-apocalyptic. You know, I'm very moved and excited to hear about this love story aspect to melt my heart. But, Zach, what was the initial, like, moment of... Because I also like this idea of someone being forced out of the world, some pacifist really having to kind of come to grips with, you know, whether it's their choice or the world forces them to their beliefs. Like, how did it originally start, this idea?
Yeah.
Were you watching a movie and then were you like, how can I turn this to 11?
I think I love Walking Dead. I love Last of Us. I love Fallout. I love these kinds of stories. But I think I was thinking about, I like to take, you know, this is my kind of the game I like to play. I like to say, okay, if I were to do that, what is a way that we haven't seen it before? And it seems like once you get bit by the zombie, the dilemma's over. It's it, you know? And I think juxtaposed with the world that we're living in, and we kind of feel like we're living in a brutal world. And I feel like the world has always been brutal, but I feel like when it was brutal, we at least took a moment to recognize that it was brutal. And now we're desensitized to it. And there's something different going on in the last decade with the amount of savagery that we tolerate and the amount of, and we feel there are monsters in the world and there's nothing we can do about it. So it was all these kind of feelings about what's going on in the world today. And beyond politics, just our relationship with violence seems different.
Oh yeah.
And that mixed with this, well, what if, isn't that interesting if there was an extra twist in a monster apocalypse story where you could save yourself at the expense of another? If we were pushed to kill ourselves, would we give up our human decency? And that just made it an interesting landscape. And then I think I hadn't seen a love story in a strong way in this way, in a story that takes itself seriously. And I think, you know, that was something that Stefano and I bonded on early on. We both loved the idea of telling a mature story that has both a tremendous amount of fun in the action and the adventure, but has a lot of heart. And I hadn't seen that. And so all those kind of ideas came together, and Only the Savage Are Left was the result. And
yeah, it's a great title too, just by the by.
Thank you.
It grabs you.
I do want to ask more about that, but Stefano, just to ask you about the violence thing. I mean, this is part and parcel with like working in superhero comics and other things like that. You have to live with that a lot longer because you're drawing it. Like you are drawing a scene of a person eating another person or things even more horrible than that. How do you tackle that psychologically when you're at the art table for hours at a time?
Yeah. And how do you sleep at night too? Just a follow up.
How do you sleep?
Well, I must say that horror is my favorite genre.
Oh, wow.
So I really love horror movies since I was very, very young. Because I remember when I was 12, I had a friend who was working in a cinema, in a movie theater. And he hallowed me inside, even on rated movies. I saw the first movie I saw, it was The Evil Dead, I remember.
Oh, yeah, nice.
It was 1982 or something.
Wow.
And when I draw horror, I always try to I can be graphic, okay, but it's very very hard to describe. I try not to be I don't know if it is correct in English. I try not to be vulgar.
Okay.
I don't know how to say it. I try to instill horror with my style, with my drawing style, for example, and I work a lot on the eyes of the people, of the characters, because I think that all the emotions starts from the eyes. So that's why I really love drawing even monsters in this particular book, because I can play with their eyes.
That's so interesting. And you said that before as well, talking about the eyes. You seem very focused on that. I don't think I've ever heard an artist specifically say that before. What is involved for you in drawing eyes? Because, you know, normally in comic books, it's like a little black dot, and that's pretty much it. But you're clearly doing something a little more complicated there.
No, I work a lot on the eyes. For example, there is a scene where a monster is eating a human human arm, and we really focus on the eyes of the monster. And I work a lot in rendering to say in English the internal part of the eye.
The iris.
That's okay. I can't explain it because it's difficult, but I do circle lines. I mean, I have a way of drawing them that I really love, and I know that it works, because when I started doing horror, for example, for the French market, I did work on a lot of horror books. And when readers said, I love how Raffaele draws the eyes because you can see fear, you can see, I say, well, okay, I'm on the right. I'm on the right.
Alex, we're doing, this is video, right? Let's do,
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's do. We printed an ash can. So people have not seen this. This was an exclusive that was only featured at Comics Pro, but we'll just give a little taste.
Look at that.
So you see the eyes of that scene. Oh, yeah. Very, very, provocative. Menacing and
visual. Yeah, wow, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll mention for anybody listening on audio, go to the YouTube and you can see the video of that.
We talked a lot about, and I Stefan has been such a joy to collaborate with. We talked a lot about, okay, what do the eyes of infected people look like, because are they possessed? Are they mutating? Are they mutating it? Like there's all these little, as readers, we've seen it all. And so it's like, what convention are we tapping into? And how do we convey? And it was like, no, these are human beings that are being turned into animalistic monsters. And that's kind of, it's all about that savagery. So let's give the readers that icon, that symbol. So, yeah.
It's definitely intense. It grabs you for sure. When he was talking about the eyes, I immediately thought of that panel and, I was like, oh yeah, I remember some creepy eyes that stayed with me for a while after I read it. While we're talking about video, Zach, your nerd wall behind you there, that library of books is very impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to see a man of your caliber represented well with the works behind you.
I try my best. I got to read a lot
If you want references, if you want, you got to be able
all
to,
the
yeah.
time.
Yeah. Well, what Pete actually wants to ask is, do you have a favorite book or two in your shelf behind you?
Yeah. That you'd want to maybe.
Do I have a favorite book? Man.
Just something that's on the wall right that now. You're...
There's so many. I come back again and again to Deadly Class. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And I love Wes Craig's storytelling, the visual.
Yeah, great eyeball work in that book as well.
Yeah, very. That's one of my favorites. But it's always helpful. If I'm doing a post-up, doing this one, I can go and say, okay, let me look at this, let me look at that, and study different things. So, yeah.
And Stefano, you also have a bookshelf behind you. Any highlights from that?
Yeah,
it's less of a nerd.
I saw
wall.
The Dune behind you.
Mostly books. My comics are in another part of the studio.
Okay.
And I have thousands of comics. Too many.
I hear you.
I mean, that's all it is. I did want to ask you, Zach, about the origins a little bit, and maybe this is too specific. I realize you're going on a big journey after the pages that we've seen from this book.
Yeah.
But it's hard not to read watching a society get sick with a disease, get a cure for that disease, and then society turn on each other without thinking of COVID. How much of that was an inspiration of the book, or is it more like just
general? No, I think that's what makes it. That's what makes it interesting is because it's the post-apocalyptic stories that have come out before were always, and that's the other thing I get. So I truly believe this. I don't believe that something like a post-apocalyptic story has had its time and we're done with it because our experience in life, our society is always changing. So Walking Dead was so much of that moment. We're in a completely different moment now. And we will be for years to come. And so, I think that, Alex, you're absolutely right to draw that parallel to what we went through as a society under COVID. I mean, we tore ourselves apart. It was not, we should have been able to come together and we didn't. And it was extremely traumatic on all of us. And so I think that, and then we look at it, and if you're a pessimist, which I feel myself becoming more and more as life goes on, I don't want to be, but I kind of go, of course we tore ourselves apart. of course we were bad to each other. I don't want to believe that. I want to believe that we're good people, but we weren't. I mean, as a society, we individually, we were all trying, but as a society, we don't get an A in that. Our grade in that is not an A. So, I think it's interesting to see an outbreak and see that we tore each other apart, and obviously that there are parallels there. And I think that's what makes it timely, and that's what gives it a new experience for readers to kind of connect to. And I think also, hopefully, as the characters go on this journey, it feels new and fresh because it's looking at slightly different situations. You know, you're always going to have abstract moral questions and how do I survive questions. But I think our book is specifically tackling certain situations that will feel more modern and different. And I believe it'll stand out.
Obviously, it's a 5-issue series, and I'm sure you don't want to talk about where you net out thematically or plot-wise or anything like that, but do you feel like you worked through any of the emotions / trauma that you experienced from COVID in the past couple of years by doing this book? Or are they
you brought up the run. I will just say, too, when I launched Kill All Immortals, we also initially launched as an open-ended 5-issue. We kind of said 5 issues because, you know, but we also said, but we'll see where this goes. And that one hit big and we knew we had legs and we kept going. So Only the Savage Are Left is currently set to experience a first arc, but we'll see how it goes. I could see this story having some legs, but I don't know. We're taking it. And we want to give one fulfilling season. We don't want to leave the door. We want to give you a tremendous conclusion to this one where you go, oh, my God, that's good. But then maybe would we ever do more? We'll see. But in terms of did I get stuff out, I think I got out more, less about COVID and more about how I feel about seeing so much violence and savagery going on right now in our streets and in the world. Sure, and yeah. Just it's so commonplace and it's just so sick. It's so weird. And it's just like, so I feel like cathartic kind of writing a savage, violent book and saying, hey, this is okay. And so I'm getting out, but I don't have any answers too. All I can do as a creator is ask questions, and you know, I don't know what the solutions are, but I know that it feels different, and I like to.
Yeah,
like,
if you could, if you could have answers, so we could solve this whole societal problems that we have. That
I wouldn't
be
writing. I wouldn't be writing. Yeah, I don't know, Stefano. Do you feel the same experience in the world? Like, I'm in the United States. Do you feel the same in your country and in Europe? Do you feel?
Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, things are not 100% okie-dokie over there? All right. Interesting. Interesting. Changes my moving plans, I guess. Yeah. For both of you, before we start to wrap up here, obviously we're talking about this book, but is there anything else you want to plug that folks should check out? Again, we're very focused on Only the Savage Are Left, but Stefano, for you, anything else people should be checking out from you?
Before we plug, I want to say one more thing. Stefano has been drawing so many licensed properties in Big Two for so long. These pages are so breathtaking. I cannot wait for the readers to see. I'm seeing some of the new post-apocalyptic stuff come through. And, you know, it's just so authentic. I really do think that, you know, it's cinematic and it stands out. And it is a fresh. I haven't seen a post-apocalyptic. It feels natural, but it also feels fresh. And so I'm very excited for readers to get into the visuals and the aesthetic of this book. I think they're going to absolutely love it. I'll also say we've got some incredible covers. We just dropped Stefano's A cover is mesmerizing. It's so good. Ooh. But we got 3 other amazing covers. We have one from Marco Mastrazzo. If I'm saying his name right, absolutely powerful of the main character with a gun and a smiley t-shirt, and very powerful. We have a Todd Beats, who's an incredible cover artist doing things for Invincible and Battle Beast right now, and he did a cover for us. And then of course David Mack did our incentive cover, absolutely beautiful cover. So in terms of plugging, definitely as you start to go to see which ordering this book, look at all those covers, because you might need more than one. They're really all fantastic.
Yeah. Stefano, anything else you would like to plug that people should check out?
What do you mean? Other books?
Other projects.
Yeah, other projects. Any other projects?
No, well, Alien versus Captain America just just went out. I'm actually also working on a project for France, but it's scheduled for the next year, because we way way in advance, and this allow me to do other projects too, for example. So there is a second issue of Wonder Man coming out in April, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. I worked on, and nothing else that I can speak about.
All right, that's more than awesome. Enough. Zach, what about you? I know we mentioned a couple of the other Dark Horse.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Kill All Immortals 2 is still active. It hit a slight delay, but it's coming out very, very soon with the next issue, and that's still active. And we're extremely excited to be bringing back a third arc on Kill All Immortals that will hit later this year. We have Francisco Mana coming on board, big Marvel artist who's going to close out the series with us. Masterminds is still in its final few issues, and then we'll have a graphic novel out this summer for that. Very excited about that. And the other big series that I'm working on in this slate of books is called The Smart Division with Eisner-winning artist John Pearson. I did Mindset with John Pearson. Since then, he's done Infernals at Image. He's done In Bloom at Boom and some other really great books. But we've been talking for years about reuniting. It's about what if someone used an AI app to commit crimes. There are safeguards on that, but what if someone designed it to not have safeguards? But the two
that's FBI actually detect- happening right now, Zach. I don't want to interrupt you.
Is it really?
Yeah. No, I mean, there's OpenAI, there's ChatGPT. They're all committing crimes. They're stealing our work.
Oh, hot take.
Touche. But instead of murdering our taste, what if they could murder our? Our people. So yeah, it is a murder book and a detective story. It's about two detectives who have to hunt down a killer using an AI crime app. And it is, I mean, as you, Alex, it is timely. We're all trying to figure out what AI is going to do to us. But instead of AI turning sentient, this is what if people use it in the wrong way. But it's going to be if you liked Mindset, it's going to be an absolutely breathtaking book. We love playing with form, and John and I, so that was going to be great. That'll be out in August, but Only the Savage is the first new book I have this year, and that's out in June, and cannot wait to bring you guys more on that.
Awesome.
Zach, Stefano, thank you so much for coming on, and everybody listening. As Zach mentioned, Only the Savage Are Left, number one. It's hitting June 3rd in comic book stores.
Wait.
But you can go to your stores right now and tell them to order it for you. I didn't actually know what the final order cutoff date is.
Probably the top of May. You know, I would say definitely get it in. Get your order in by May 1st. So you've got a little time, but I wouldn't wait on it.
And you have to order four copies, one for each cover. Is that correct?
I mean, you should. I mean, I would.
There seems to be
a bit of a collector's boom going on right now in comics. If you've heard, between Doric and White Sky, so we might just print a little less of these books and let them go. No, I'm just kidding. No, they'll be all out there. But I've seen many sellouts on my books again and again. So if you want one of these covers, do not wait a week to think that you're going to stroll in a week later and you're going to get a David Mack cover or a Todd Beetz cover or any of these covers. I mean, the whole thing could sell out. So it would definitely benefit you to pre-order, and it helps your shops.
Yeah. Guys, thank you again so much for coming on. An absolute pleasure. And looking forward
to
reading the rest of the book.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Alex. Thank you.
Thank you.
No.
Cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.